is an 8-iron, and it's a dead shank.
Wow.
Way right.
Oh, takes a hop off the path.
You gotta be kidding me.
Very tough pitch shot right here. You gotta hit it into the hill. One hop up and bite, and it's in.
Kind of like that!
Hey, what's going on, everybody? This is Jay from Sub 70. Today is March 5th. Yesterday, Phil Mickelson won the WGC Mexico in a playoff with Justin Thomas. It was an awesome final round, I would say. The course itself is a little strange, playing at maybe 6,500, 6,700 yards once you account for elevation. And it's super narrow, so you end up with guys hitting a lot of irons or hybrids off tees on the tight holes, and then when they do have space, they're basically driving the greens because of the elevation. But it was definitely entertaining. Anytime Phil's in the mix, you know, he's hitting from the forest, he's hitting people and then yelling at them in Spanish. Just absolutely hilarious. He lips out putts that I don't understand how they don't go in, but somehow it always happens to Phil, and his reactions are just priceless. And then, of course, the Justin Thomas hole out on the 72nd hole is just one of the most ridiculous things you'll ever see. I don't know how anyone can deny that Justin Thomas has been the best golfer in the world over the last 12 months. He's really, really good, and it seems like he plays incredibly well on the weekends. So I don't know. He's got a really long career ahead of him, and I think we might, you know, 5-10 years from now, you know, be talking about him as the best golfer from this generation. So the interview of on our podcast this week is with Robert Gomez. Robert grew up in the Las Vegas area and then played college golf at the University of Arizona. Bear down. He played in the Walker Cup. He's probably most famously known for an incredible shot that he hit actually on the 72nd hole of the Bay Hill or Arnold Palmer Invitational. It's one of the best shots in PGA Tour history. You'll have to go check it out. I'll include the YouTube video link maybe with the tweet or the post for this interview. Really awesome talk. Robert talked a lot about his victories on the PGA Tour, battling through adversity and getting his third win later in his career. Talked about his charity work, and then actually had a pretty lengthy and good conversation with Jason about the sort of local game that they play at their club with some of the other guys and how they make things fair for a PGA pro that's playing with a bunch of hacks. So really interesting talk. We appreciate Robert's time. Check us out on social media at GolfSub70, and here's the interview.
Well, I would like to welcome to the podcast three-time PGA Tour winner, Robert Gomez. Robert, I really appreciate you taking the time to do this today. Thanks for being on the program.
No, thanks for having me.
I had the pleasure of running into you when we were down at the PGA show and was talking to you about the Champions Tour coming up. And I know you turned 50 in July, I believe, and you seem pretty excited about getting out there. And I know you're still playing the web.com this year and you want to be competitive, but how excited are you to get out on the Champions Tour? And what does it look like is going to be your first event this season when you do get out there when you turn 50?
Well, I'm really excited to get out there, and you know, my first event's going to be the Senior Open at St. Andrews. So I'm really excited about that. Looking forward to that a bunch. I'm really not going to play much on the web. I've just come to realize there's a couple guys that turned 48 that have more money than me career earning wise, so they're going to bump me out of the events I thought I was going to get into. So it's going to be slim pickings for me out there. But you know, that said, I'm just looking forward to I'm working on my game. Looking forward to July when I turn 50 the Saturday before the Open there at St. Andrews, and I'm just you know, can't wait.
That's a pretty good tournament to start off your Champions Tour career with, especially at that to have St. Andrews as be the one you're starting off with is pretty darn good. I don't blame you for looking forward to that tournament. What are you currently working on your golf game? How is the shape of your game, and sort of what keys or things are you looking to try to improve upon, for turning 50 and getting out there?
Well, right now my game is in really bad shape. I've been battling some injuries, a couple things that have kept me from really playing or practicing over the last, basically since November. So I just started working with my coach, I guess it would have been last Thursday. So I've got a little ways to go. I'm making a few funky swings that, I just got to get out of and out of the habit of doing. And but it's that's when I do make the proper swing at it, the ball's going, it's actually been pretty good. So I'm really looking forward to grinding on my golf game now. And I've got Bay Hill coming up here in a few weeks, and I just can't wait.
When you started playing, I know you grew up in Las Vegas, and when you started playing golf as a kid, who introduced you to the game and how did you sort of get involved with it? And if you can kind of talk how you got started with it, essentially.
Well, yeah, growing up in Las Vegas, I played, I played all the sports as a kid. And then at age two, my dad was, he had the job of babysitting me one day, and it was a Saturday, I believe, and he wanted to hit some golf balls. So we had this little Arnold Palmer range right by my house, and he went to the range, took me, and next thing you know, I picked up one of his clubs and started hitting a few balls. Obviously, they didn't go very far because I was swinging at it with his clubs. And next thing you know, he cut down a club for me, and there are pictures of me swinging and hitting golf balls in our backyard at age two. So, and that's how I got started. He got me lessons right away, which was probably the smartest thing I could have done. It's the best thing to do, especially when you've got people just taking up the game. Is to actually get them lessons and start from scratch.
And what age did you start showing the potential that, you're going to be playing D1 college type golf? And then did you start playing golf exclusively at a certain age, or did you always play the other sports all the way through, middle school and high school?
No, I got my first set of golf clubs when I was five. My first full junior set of golf clubs, they had the junior sets with the driver, I guess it was a 5-wood, and then you had your 3 irons, that kind of thing, or four irons.
I had the same set, yeah.
Yeah. All kids back then, back when we were growing up, had those kind of clubs. Nowadays, they're full sets, but I had my first set when I was five, and I just took to it, apparently, and I played all the other sports until I was about 12. I played soccer. I played 1 year of football and really hated that. I didn't like getting up at 4:30 in the morning trying to put on those pads and get to games. But I just love golf. And summertimes I play baseball, and I go to the golf course with my mom and early in the mornings. And just stayed there when I didn't have games, baseball games. And at age 12, I just was kind of my baseball coach actually made me quit. Baseball and just stuck with golf. I was always at that age, because since my birthday is in July, I was always at the age I played with the older kids. So when I was 11, I made the all-star team, and we didn't make it very far, but so I was a pretty decent second baseman and pitcher. Come to turning 12 and going up to the older league, or the next age division, my coach always told us we have to show up to games and, show up to practice and show up to games, and otherwise you don't play. So, I mean, I always showed up. Sometimes I'd be late because of golf, little tournaments I was playing in or whatever. And, at one point I just wasn't playing any baseball at all. And there were kids that ended up, some kids wouldn't show up to practice and they'd still play. So it just kind of got me out of the wanting to play baseball. And just stuck with golf.
And at what point in your high school career did the D1 colleges start coming? And then how did you make your decision to go to Arizona?
Well, I don't know. I showed some potential in junior golf, really. I played pretty well, especially around Las Vegas. And then I went played the Junior Orange Bowl tournament, so some coaches were looking at me then. I think probably, I shot my first round in the 60s when I was 12. So that's when I really realized I thought I could do something in a sport. And I don't know what age the coaches started looking at me, but like I said, I know I played in that Junior Orange Bowl, and I can't remember the year, but I had some coaches following me around that back then.
And on the team that you had at Arizona, was there some guys that listeners might know who were on your team? Because I know the team was pretty good and pretty strong that ended up playing on the tour or made it out there. Was Furyk on your team at that point?
He played 1 year. We played 1 year together. He was a freshman while I was a junior. My last year as a junior, he was on the team with me. But my first 2 years, we had pretty strong teams. We were ranked number one my second year, and we probably should have won the NCAAs, but we just struggled. We played at North Ranch, and I think UCLA or USC was hosting that year, and we just didn't play well as a team. The golf course was a little funky, and we just struggled. Almost missed the cut. We ended up making the cut, but we had a pretty strong team. We had Mike Springer, who won, I think he's won twice on the tour. He's playing the champions now a little bit. Aaron and Eric Meeks, they were from Southern California, but Eric won the U.S. Amateur in 1988, so he was a good player. And Larry Silvera, who played some on the tour, and you know, now he's working for Titleist on the PGA Tour in one of the vans. So we had a pretty strong team back then, and you know, like I said, Furyk, I played 1 year with him, we had a decent team that year. It wasn't great, but you see how good he's turned out. So, but it was just a fun time. I really enjoyed going to the school part. You know, I enjoyed the college. It's not the school part because I left after 3 years, but I enjoyed the whole experience of college.
Yeah, and it should be that fun experience, right? I mean, that's a part of it. And then also...
Absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, that's... I think every kid gets... I enjoyed my time there, and I think you kind of grow up and everybody sort of enjoys that experience of going down there, getting away from it a little bit, and like I said, kind of figuring out what you're going to do with your career and your life. So it should be a fun experience. Also, as a follow-up to that, in 89, you get selected to play on the Walker Cup team. How was that experience for you, and did you sort of take from that you're kind of ready to take that next step and maybe think about turning professional?
Well, I knew I was going to be turning professional. I mean, I finished school in 89 and then had that summer. And I knew I was going to be on the Walker Cup team. So I waited to turn pro until after the U.S. Amateur, which was the week after the Walker Cup. And I turned pro and I played. I got a couple sponsor exemptions to play in some tournaments, and then went to Q school that year. But the Walker Cup, I'll tell you what, it was. I haven't been on a Ryder Cup team, but it was a lot of fun. It was nice to have that team feel, and to play with the guy that I played with, and we ended up losing the matches, but I ended up playing great. I had 3.5 points out of the 4 I could get, and it was just a great experience for me to be in that situation, and I think it helped me once I did turn pro, and I think it helped me win my first couple events.
Mickelson was on that team, if I'm not mistaken, and my question on that is, how did you guys get along being from rival schools, and is there a good Mickelson story you can share from being on the Walker Cup with him?
Not really. I mean, we've gotten along ever since, ever since even in school. I mean, yeah, he was a freshman when I was a junior as well. So, and we were pretty much rivals. He at ASU and I was at U of A. But Phil's a good guy and great player, and we've always gotten along. It was being on the team together was actually just I don't know what you say. It just made it even better, but. He's always been a good guy, and I can't remember any stories from back that far. I have trouble remembering last week.
Well, Well, he would at least be entertained to play with, you know, what he can do with the golf ball. And I'm sure you can even see the talent when you were on that team with him that, you know, even as a freshman, he was really, really good. So,
absolutely. Yeah. I mean, he had skills, you know, and it's well documented, his skills on around the greens and things like that. And I'll tell you what, he was a magician with his wedges for sure.
So you turn pro, and then did you go to Q school right away, or did you get enough sponsors exemptions to kind of try to get your card from that direction as some of the guys do when they first start out? How did you make your way onto the PGA Tour?
No, I actually went to the Q school. I went through all three stages back then and got my card. We played the finals at the Woodlands in Houston, and I finished 42nd. Out of the school that year, and I wasn't sure how much I was going to get into. I just struggled early in the week, but ended up getting it done at the end, and got my card. And they it didn't look like I was going to get in the Tucson Open, which was the first tournament of the year, in 1990. So they've given me an exemption, which I ended up getting in on my number. You know, come to find out. Later, but still knowing I was playing helped a lot instead of having to wait it out. And that was a busy week for me. I ended up being named College Player of the Year the year before and getting the Jack Nicklaus Trophy for that. But we ended up I ended up flying out to Miami. I played the Monday Pro-Am in Tucson, flew out to Miami to get the award, which was. I caught the red eye Monday night, got there Tuesday, got the award, flew back Tuesday night and played in the Wednesday Pro-Am in Tucson and then ended up winning on Sunday.
Yeah. I mean, that's crazy. Was that your first PGA Tour event you played in?
It was my first as a member of the tour. Correct. My first that I played in, but it was my first as a member.
And you go out and win. So, I mean, that's gotta be the most surreal thing. You're a member of the PGA Tour, the first event you play in. Oh, no problem. I'm just going to go out and win this thing. Like, what did you take from it? Obviously, it has to be the greatest feeling in the world that, you know, you're a winner on the PGA Tour, but did it seem easy? Were you just young enough at that point where you're just like, I'm just going to fire at it? And were you comfortable in that situation? I mean, it had to be a completely different scenario, yet you had the game and the fortitude to get through it and win.
Yeah, I won college events and played well on the Walker Cup and some other experiences like that. But I played college golf in Tucson. So, you know, being there with a lot of fans, a lot of friends and other family members and just people that I knew playing the golf course that I really knew pretty well. And I don't know if it was easy or what, but I was just really excited and had a lot of confidence when I turned pro. And it's just, you know, you see the kids today and they come out firing because they have all the confidence in the world from having success in college golf and doing some stuff in amateur golf. And they just come out fearless. And that's how I was, you know, over time, the more 2 and 3 footers I started missing, it takes you toll on you. But, you know, coming out, I was just lucky and I was, probably, it was probably really lucky that I started there in Tucson because it did make it easier for me. Whether it was easy to win, I have no idea. I mean, I ended up playing so well on Sunday. I had a 6-shot lead playing the last hole. So that made it a little easier playing the last hole, even though I made double. But, yeah, it was just a fun time.
Yeah, I mean, that had to be a great experience. Like I said, doing it in the town you went to college, friends, family, all there. That had to be a fun party on Sunday night for your, like I said, first tour event as a PGA member, and you go out and win it. Like, wow, that's a life changer right there.
Yeah, it was. And, you know, it gave me the couple years exemption. It actually ended up being, I was exempt the rest of that year plus two more. So it was really a 3-year exemption, if you think about it. But, it made things a little bit easier, knowing being able to plan a schedule and know what I was going to play and try to do things like that.
Well, and then not long after that one, the 1990 Arnold Palmer Invitational comes around, and I'm assuming you're playing really well. I mean, you played well all that early part of that season, and it comes down to 18, and kind of walk us through. I mean, it's one of the best shots ever hit in history of the PGA Tour. If I read it correctly, you had to wait a while, and it kind of made you think a little bit of, do I hit a little cutty six, or as the time went on, you kind of said, I got to just hit a hard seven iron and go right at it?
That's pretty much it. My normal shot was a little fade, so I was used to playing that shot, take a little bit more club and hit my little cut in there. Pin was back right. I was playing with Larry Mize on Sunday. He and Greg Norman were tied at the time, and Larry was in the right rough on 18. So he was taking a long time to figure out what he wanted to do with his shot and how he wanted to play it. Cause I mean, he's a tough situation, tied for the lead and, chance to win. And he's trying to figure out any way he can to make par. So I'm right down the right center of the fairway. And, you know, I've got 176 yards. It was downwind. The wind was down and off the right a little bit. So it was, for me, it was a no brainer, little six iron. Cutting it back into the and holding up into the wind, that was going to give me my best shot to have a chance to win the tournament, and or at least get in a playoff. I thought if I made birdie, I had a chance for a playoff. And so the more I sat there, the more I had to wait for him to go ahead and hit his shot, the more nervous I got. You know, looking at all the fans in the crowd and up there in the bleachers, and it just was I get nerve wracking. So. Anytime I've ever been nervous, I always just try to hit it hard. So I said, well, let me just do something I'm not used, comfortable doing, is hitting a draw. Even though when I know I'm swinging at it well, it's not that difficult a shot for me when I'm playing well. So I said, let me just go ahead and do that. Wind is off the right a little bit, and a touch of help. So but it should work out perfectly. And, next thing you know, I hit this shot. And yeah, as people have asked me in the past, what did it feel like? And I always explain it as you hear baseball players always say that when they make a home run or hit a home run, that they never felt the ball hit the bat. And that's kind of how that felt for me. I never felt the ball hit the club. I swung and it just was so easy that it just came off exactly how I pictured it. And the wind helped it. Just enough, and sure enough, it drew right in and covered the right side of the water, and ended up going in. And it looked good in the air. I felt like it was going to be close, and I'm just glad it went in because my hands were shaking, and I don't know if I could have made a 2 or 3 footer for birdie to tie.
Did you actually see it go in?
I did. I saw it go in. We could see it all the way down the fairway, And then the roar was just unbelievable. The people that were there watching it, and it was pretty exciting.
What did Mr. Palmer say to you at the end of that tournament? I mean, that had to be just an incredible moment.
It was. He congratulated me. He said, "What a shot!" And it's just something you don't expect to happen. I didn't expect to hole it on the last hole. I was just hoping to get it somewhere where I could have a chance to have a putt for a birdie. And, so he just said congratulations, and it was really wild, cause I made the shot, had to go to the scorer's tent, sign my card, ended up in the tower talking to Johnny Miller and it was just a wild thing. Cause Greg was still on 17T. So I had to wait out a couple of holes for him to see if he was going to tie me, cause Larry ended up making bogey on the last hole, to drop out of a chance. But Greg hit a good shot at 17, had about a 20 footer, I believe, and almost made that. And then hit a good shot at 18, almost made a birdie on 18. So, Mr. Palmer was a classy man and being a past champion We got a chance to play at the PGA practice round that year at Shoal Creek, since getting to know him around, I got to know him pretty well here at Bay Hill, being a member here, and he was a classy person and really good man.
That's what I was going to ask you. I assume you got to be friends with him after being a member there and winning his golf tournament. And my question is, what did you admire about him the most?
Well, just the way he conducted himself, and what I mean by that, you know, watching him every day at the club here, you watch him with people and how he acted, how he interacted with people, and how he took the time to, I don't know, he'd be on the driving range getting ready to play in the shootouts here, and you see him, and he'd stop and sign every autograph and take pictures, and, you know, he would do that. And when he's eating, you know, he'd be eating lunch, and he'd do the same thing. Sit there, somebody come up and ask him for an autograph. And people were pretty respectful most of the time. They wouldn't catch him while he's got food in his mouth, or, you know, they'd wait till he was pretty much done eating. But he would still take the time to do it, which you don't see a lot in athletics anymore, especially with some of the other sports. Golf is a little bit different, even though, you know, some of the guys, it's a little different, but I think guys are learning. But I try to do emulate him as much as I can in that. And I know I fail sometimes. And, you know, there's sometimes when I've gotten off the course and I just maybe doubled the last hole or done something stupid. And, you know, you're not thinking, but I've tried to take that and be that kind of person myself. And again, I know I fail once in a while, but that's the one thing I took from Mr. Palmer is that kind of the way to handle yourself and to act around people.
Well, I was lucky enough to meet him, God, 25 years ago at a Champions Tour event when I was in high school. And he just had this presence, yet he made you feel like, you know, it was great to meet me. That's the way I'd put it. When you signed the autograph, he was just incredible with people. And it was just, you know, I'm in awe, of course. It's like meeting God, right? It's Arnold Palmer. But I remember that to today of like, he felt like that 30 seconds we had was, it wasn't a burden to him. He was happy to do it. And he just had this aura. It was fantastic to meet the man. It was really, really cool.
Yeah, he really is that way. And even down in the locker room after the shootouts, you know, you sit there and everybody's figuring out the cards and they're figuring out, you know, who won the game and all that. And he's just down there. He would just be down there having a drink and give you that little thumbs up once in a while that he had and a little wink here and there. And just that, you know, he did something good, or just he was almost glad that he knew you kind of thing. And that it was special.
Yeah, it was. He had the magic touch, that's for sure. Well, with your career now, you're got two wins early in your career. You're trending the right way, and now you get to play in all the majors. So my question is, of the majors that you played in, what was your favorite, and why was it your favorite, and what made it so special?
Well, going back to go to that, my first major was obviously I played the Masters that year and then the U.S. Open, but my favorite that I've ever played in was the British Open. And it was my rookie year, and I end up playing at St. Andrews, which makes this year's Open Championship, the Senior Open, so special for me, because I played my first regular Open Championship at St. Andrews. And just being over there as a rookie, as a kid, you know, and home of golf kind of thing, it was just a special place. And I had such a great time being over there. I ended up finishing, I played well, finished 12th in the tournament. So, you know, that was another, you know, great thing being over there and playing that type of golf, because that, to me, that is golf. Having to be able to hit every shot in your bag and play all different types of shots, and just, instead of just flying it and stopping it, you know, having to play the little punch shots and the little run up shots and, you know, hitting a 7-iron from 110 yards or hitting an 8-iron from 210, you know, depending on the situation and what type of shot you're going to hit. But, of all the majors, that's definitely my favorite. And obviously St. Andrews, I've only played in two Opens and one at St. Andrews and one at Birkdale, my second year, and finished 50 and 50 something in that. So I made the cut both times in the Open. And, so it was definitely my favorite major of all of them.
I could understand. It's my favorite one to watch as well, and the history of it. And I love playing Lynx golf. So I hear where you're coming from on the, what you have to do to get the ball and how the wind makes everything change. And it's never the same golf course twice. It's a just a brilliant way the Scots came up with playing the game. It truly is. My next question is, next 7 years after your victories, some solid golf, but also not winning again for a while. So looking back at that 7 years after you won, you had some good consistent finishes, but you didn't win. Were you overall satisfied with sort of what you did in that period of time in your 20s on tour past those victories, looking back at it now?
Well, you know, it was a learning experience for me. I was a kid from Vegas, and you know, I didn't have the country club life. I didn't have a lot of things that some of the kids these days, you know, the opportunity they had. But overall, I mean, was I happy with my career? Probably not. I felt like I should have done better. The one thing that held me back was my putting. I was always an inconsistent type of putter. You know, whether it be, well, for the most part, it was just my stroke just wasn't the best, no matter how much I worked on it. And then I'd miss a putt here and there, and then I'd get frustrated, and, you know, my temper got me a little bit. I, you know, another thing, I didn't work hard enough during my career. I slacked off a little bit, and, you know, partied maybe just a little bit too hard, and just had fun. I mean, which every, you know, 20-something kid does. And so that was part of it. It was probably the main reason why I didn't have as much success as I probably should have. But overall, I mean, I was happy with my experience as a PGA Tour player. Not happy with not winning as much as I felt like I should have. But happy with overall being out there and staying, you know, I stayed in the top 125, and I still had kept my card and, you know, things like that. I felt like I should have had more wins, but I just didn't. And, you know, but that was that. I learned a lot from it, because it taught, when I didn't have a chance to win, I gave up and I didn't grind it out. And, you know, back then the money wasn't that big like it is now, especially. And so if I was going to miss, if I was going to be right there having a chance to make the cut or and, you know, not make very much or just enjoy my weekend, I would just kind of not try, I guess would be it. Nowadays, you know, you make the cut, you still got a chance to do something. And I learned a lot about that, because there have been times when I did struggle the first couple days, and then all of a sudden something clicked and ended up having a good finish.
I can, being in my 20s myself, I can understand where you're out on tour and you're going to have a good time with it. In my 20s, I would have probably done the same thing. And then in 98, you have a really serious car accident. And what did that take out of you physically? And were you ever quite the same physically after that car accident?
It took a long time for me to get back to where I felt to be able to hit the ball and do the things I could do before the accident. I hurt my hand, my right hand, my neck, and my back. I had a bruised liver, bruised spleen. I was in the hospital for about 7 days, I guess, up there in Maryland. Again, it took me a long time to get back. With the injuries that I did sustain, you know, the hand injury especially, I struggled trusting the fact that I could make a golf swing and it wasn't going to hurt. And so it took a while to get there. And, you know, I thought I was fooling myself. I thought I could come back and play right away. And so I didn't take a medical, and I probably should have, and just rehabbed it. And that probably hurt me a more than anything, just because, I don't know, playing hurt, you know, just, I lost more confidence because of that than anything. And lost that ability to know that I was going to be okay at some point. You know what I mean? It's really hard to explain, but, knowing, you know, when you're healthy and you're out there playing and you struggle a little bit, you know you can come back from it. But when you're struggling health-wise or physically, it's so tough because you don't know if you're ever going to get back, because you don't know when the pain's going to go away.
And that kind of coincides with when you started playing really well again. Then if you look at like 2002 to 2004, your game starts really getting back in top level. And then we go to 2005 and you pick up your third PGA Tour victory at the Texas Open, shooting a 64 in the final round. I mean, that had to be so satisfying after that period of time.
Absolutely. You know, it was a long time coming back, and I finally at the John Deere, I was able to get my card back, and I think it was 92 or so. I had a good finished second. And that helped me secure my card and get back exempt. And that's when things started turning around for me that way. My putter still was kind of balky once in a while, and it's just inconsistent. Had my good days and my bad days, good weeks and bad weeks. And that's usually when I missed cuts, it was because of my putter. And if I made cuts or had top finishes, because I putted well that week. And I'll tell you what, the week before we were at the week in 05, the week before I won in Tucson, we were in Pennsylvania at the 84 Lumber, and I played well, hit it really well, and just didn't drive it as well as normal, as I normally would. But I hit it pretty good, didn't putt all that great. Stuck around, had some friends with me, went out and hit some balls, practiced a little bit over the weekend, and something clicked. I got to Tucson, and my dad grew up in Tucson, so I had a lot of family there, a lot of friends, and something, I don't know what it was, but it was just fun being there. I played in the Pro-Am on Monday, and I'm going in the tournament or in the press room for something. I forget what it was. And as I go in there, they had the trophy, and somebody asked me if I wanted to hold the trophy, and I don't know what made me do it, but I said, I'll just grab it on Sunday. And, you know, I don't know what made me say that at all. It just, that was something I said. And sure enough, come Sunday, I'm holding that trophy. I just played really well all week. I putted great. I made all the clutch putts I should have. I hit it unbelievably well. I had some good scores all week. And it's just a fun place for me to be with all my family, all my friends and aunts and uncles and, you know, that kind of thing. It was just a great week and a great time for me to come back and win my third event after such such a long time in between.
Yeah, I think you still have the record, right? It's 394 events played in between victories. Like, just as a golf fan, I give you so much credit for the perseverance that took to, you know, to do it and still realize, like, you have the talent to do it and the desire to do it. And it was a great story when you won that. It still is now to you know, to have that gap and still, after everything you've been through, to get back on top again is a cool story.
Thanks. Yeah, it was 15 years and so many days. And, you know, there's a stat. I don't know exactly what it is off the top of my head, but yeah, I mean, and it was more about perseverance than anything, I think, for me. Cause I just did, I just kept at it. I knew I enjoy playing golf and I enjoy playing competitive golf. It's frustrating when you're not competitive. And like the last few years, I had, you know, the last few years have been tough, trying to get back, but I just am so looking forward to the Champions Tour to be able to compete again. Playing the web.com has been, kind of an eye opening experience for me because these kids, like I said earlier, the kids are fearless and they're taught differently. They're taught differently, I think, than I was taught growing up. Because when I was growing up, I was taught keeping the ball in play was pretty, you know, important. You know, we had higher rough, a little bit higher rough sometimes. And the greens were a lot firmer back, you know, I feel like when I was coming up. And nowadays, I mean, the courses just get longer. And, you know, they're in better shape. I mean, they've done a lot with getting golf courses in shape. So they're a lot more receptive to shots. The roughs are, you know, there are certain weeks the roughs are pretty bad, but overall there's you know, these guys can play out of it. They hit it so far off the tee, they fly it a long way, and they can take advantage from rough, which, you know, I've never been a long ball hitter, but I've always had kind of a shallow swing plane, so I've always struggled hitting the ball out of the rough. And you know, nowadays they're just taught better. They're just taught how to hit it out of the rough, and they're taught because that's where these kids hit it most of the time. But they're 300 yards into the rough instead of, you know, 250.
Well, I was talking to Sean McKeel about this. I just turned 45 years old. I'm not that far behind you. And we were, I was taught to hit a little low running hook, but, you know, I started off probably like you did with a little wooden headed club and a blotta ball that spun like crazy. So we, you know, I was never taught swing out of your shoes at it than you know, hit a lob wedge from 120 yards. It's just a different game. I think the equipment's had a lot to do with that too, with some of these younger kids have never grown up where the sweet spot was the, you know, the size of a dime on these things and a ball that really spun. So it's, you know, it's a different, you know, my kids will be taught different than the way I was taught. The game has changed. The equipment's changed. I think that's a lot of it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that is a lot of it. Like you said, they're just taught to swing hard. I mean, because the sweet spots are bigger there, you know, and again, equipment has had a lot to do with that, but I mean, it's a good thing and a bad thing. I mean, you get these golf courses now and these designers, which they're just making long, in my opinion. They're not putting a premium on, I don't know, accuracy. And some of these courses they build, how do the members play them? I mean, when they build them the way they build them, which to me, that's not fun. You know, I'll go out and play Bay Hill, and I like to play up at least to be able to hit some shots instead of hitting long irons and you know, fairway woods into par fours. You know, for me, I like to play a little bit up sometimes, and it's just fun. But some of the, you know, golf courses now, they put a lot of, you know, 490 par fours and 500 yard par fours, and that's not fun for membership, in my opinion.
Well, or even some of the public courses they built. I mean, there's a whole other subject matter of the debate of golf of, you know, a lot of these courses they built in the 90s and early 2000s. If you're a 15 handicap, would be the worst 6 hours you could ever spend. I mean, they're you know, forced carries and, you know, golf. I think a lot of these courses that they build for membership should be based upon more, they're building it for the members. And you got to have, you know, courses for PGA Tour players because, you know, you couldn't put them on my home course. They would shoot, you know, 30 under par in four rounds. But 99% of people don't play golf like that. So that's a whole nother, and I'm with you on some of the way they made these golf courses, how difficult they could be. If you were a member, it'd be brutal. Or you have to have a membership at another course to take your family to.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Well, I also know you've given a lot of time to charity and with the Boys and Girls Club. So what has that meant, you know, to you? And it's got to be a great feeling. And I'm assuming you get a lot out of it as well for helping those kids out and doing what you're doing with it.
Well, yeah, I've been doing charity work since I started playing the tour. And I've had, let's see now, it's been... I did 10 events in Las Vegas when I lived there, and I've had different charities every time I've done one. And in Vegas, it was the Ronald McDonald House Charities with the Ronald McDonald House we had in Vegas. And then St. Jude Ranch for Children. They took abused and neglected children and took them in and took care of them and really made them really good people. Then obviously here with Ron McDonald, with Boys and Girls Club, we've given them a lot of support, the clubs in Lake and Sumter County. I just believe in giving back, and you know, that's probably the best thing that my career has been able to do for me is to be able to give back. And you know, yes, do I want to play well for myself and for, I don't know, to have a better life for myself? Absolutely I do. But when you play well, you got more people, I don't know, willing to help you with your causes, I guess. I don't know. And I think that that's the most important thing is when I play well, you know, I have the people there that can help support, you know, the charities and doing the stuff that, that I'm trying to do to help give back. And I was a Boys and Girls Club kid at, in Las Vegas, which is the main reason why we chose them as one of our charities to support. Because I truly believe that, that kids need a place to go and to try to stay out of trouble. And that's, you know, a lot of kids don't have that opportunity. And I was fortunate enough to be able to do that. Yes, my golf kept me out of a lot of trouble, but in summertime when there weren't any tournaments or anything to do, before I really got big into golf, I mean, it was, my brother and I could have gotten into trouble. You know, kids in Las Vegas, yeah, we lived away from the strip, but you know, there's always ways to get in trouble. And I'm just glad we had a place to go. And, I've just totally believe in giving back. And that's the, again, the biggest thing that being a professional golfer and doing what I do, I'm able to do and to be able to help other guys and help them with their charity causes and different things that they're doing. And, you know, I try to do as much of it as possible.
That's awesome. Yeah. Keep up the good work with that stuff. It's gotta be, like I said, a great feeling to help out. My next questions are going to be kind of on the lighter side. So we kind of ask all the tour players we're fortunate enough to get on the podcast a lot of these same questions, and their answers are pretty interesting. But I haven't asked this one before, and it just kind of hit me to ask about it. So if you're playing at your home club, let's say it's Bay Hill, and you're playing against amateur golfers, do they normally want to give you too many shots, thinking you're obviously that much better? Or out of ego, do they want to see how close they can get to Robert Gomez, and they're only going to give you three aside and then you clobber them? Like, all the years of playing with amateurs in your home money game, is it too few shots or too many from their standpoint, from the amateurs?
You mean that I'm giving them?
Yes, exactly. Yeah, right. Did they beg you for way more than they should be getting, or does the ego kick in and say, no, I can, give me two aside, I can still compete with you? Like, what trend line does that normally happen with a tour player and an amateur?
Well, where I play, I play mostly at Orange Tree, and we actually our game is a scratch game. We don't play with handicaps. We have high handicap players that play in it, but it's a two best ball of the four or five some, and the captains go in a picking room and pick their teams, A, B, C, D, and we play two best balls. The two balls that count have to be hold every hole. And again, I'll be an A player, obviously, and but I'm playing with guys that are shooting 90s on my team, and it gets away from the handicap thing, and I'll get back to that in a second. But in my opinion, for me, and why I enjoy this game that we play, is that it makes my balls counting almost every hole, so it helps. It makes me grind, and Orange Tree is probably, in my opinion, it's definitely one of the best golf courses here in Central Florida, in Orlando, in my opinion. It's not the Isle Words, it's not the Lake Nona's, it's not, you know, it's not Bay Hill. And they're well-known golf courses, and they're always in great shape. Orange Tree's a little tight, 7,000-yard golf course, but the greens are good. There's OB or water on every hole, and close on every hole. I mean, you can miss it a drive, you know, 10 yards and you're out of bounds. So you have to play well. It's a golf course that I got introduced to about probably 10 years ago. And I'll tell you what, I enjoy it because it plays differently every day, because depending on the wind and where the pin positions are, the game that we're playing in, that kind of thing. Payne Stewart used to play there when he was getting ready for majors, and he would go and hit, if he could hit driver every hole and keep it in play, he knew he was ready to play in a major. So that, you know, that's the type of golf course I play, and that's the game that I play in. So again, we don't use handicaps. Going back to the handicap thing, I have gone places and played with guys, and yeah, I'll play with an amateur, and I'll usually try to give them more shots myself, just because it makes me grind a little bit more. I don't want to play a guy that, you know, is easy for me to beat. I'd rather give them a shot extra or two shots extra and make me grind a little bit more. Yeah. To have to beat them. A good buddy of mine in Las Vegas, Brady Expert, he was one of the best amateurs in the country back. And he's one of the best senior amateurs in the country. And he's just a wonderful guy and a really good golfer. And we would play back and forth. He was my best friend growing up. He was, he's 60 something now, but we would play amateur golf against each other. And when I was still living in Las Vegas, we would play a game. And he was a plus one handicap or plus two or something like that. And I was a plus four, but I'd give him two half shots aside. Basically one shot aside, but we mixed it up where it was only two half shots because you tie a hole, it's not a tie. So it would make me play a little bit harder. And that's what we did. And I would always give a guy a shot or two more just to make me grind it out and grind a little more. And again, that goes back to the game I play in now where my score is counting almost every hole because I'm playing with guys. My B player is usually a guy who's shooting 82 or 83. You know, that's his average because we keep all the scoring averages for the last 20 rounds. You know, we don't use the GIN handicap at the club, but we have our own. I mean, it's called the scratch game, and we have our own rules and we have our own everything and keep our own stats. So we keep their scoring averages. And as a captain, we start with the weaker captains and go down. We have a bunch of mini tour players and some other pros that play in our game, and the pros always pick last behind the amateurs, and we pick down, and then we go back up. So I'll get the worst B, one of the worst Bs, one of the worst Cs, and then one of the better Ds. So again, my B player is an 82 to 84 shooter, and my C player is an 86 to 87 shooter, and my D players are usually are shooting in the 90s or high 80s, low 90s. So my scores count almost every hole, which makes me grind I think it makes my game better because of it.
Sounds like a fun money game to play in, and actually sounds pretty fair versus because if you're playing to a zero, you're not a zero, you're probably a plus four. But I could see if I have to take the higher B's, C's, and D's, how it balances out. That's a cool game. Very cool.
Yeah, it really is. And again, we keep all our stats. We keep birdie averages for every player, even the higher handicapper. I mean, even the higher scoring averages. We have their birdie indexes. So how many rounds they play by how many birdies they make, and we have a list. It's in the picking room every day that guys can look up what the guys have been shooting, how many birdies they're making, this and that. And guys can choose their teams, that way. I'm a little different because I don't choose a team that, I probably don't choose the best players I could pick. I like, there are certain guys I like to play with. So that's what makes it fun for me too, is that I get to play with the guys I like to play with. And a couple of my buddies are really good friends, and they're probably deep players. They are D players, but I'll pick them as a C and a D just because I like to play with them, and I'll do that a lot. But we do keep the stats so that people can make choices like that. And it is just a fun game. I think the most you can lose any day is $35 or maybe 40 at the max. We play, it's a two best ball. Like I said, per hole, we pay front nine, back nine in total. And then we do team skins. We do greenies, and we'd have an individual optional $5 individual skin pot. So, I mean, it turns out like I've played where I've had success where I've swept the front, the back, and all day, or tied, or and so you get to catch a little bit of everything. And I've played where we had enough team dots, team skins, or a greenie here and there, and big enough game where I've lost $2 or a dollar. You know, our whole team's lost a dollar. We have a computer program where we put all the scores in afterwards, and everybody's standing around. But that's the other great thing is everybody's standing around and sitting around in the clubhouse, and we have a computer, and the scores are put up on the TV behind us, and it shoots out what you owe at the end. And I've been on actually the scratch game. We have a committee of five guys, and I've been on the committee now for 6 years, I guess, 5 or 6 years now. And I just enjoy it because it helps. I like to make sure that the game's not getting out of hand, and keep it fresh, and try to make it the best game we can possibly have. Because in my opinion, I've played all over the country, and, you know, traveling around, I play with my buddies everywhere. And it's just, to me, it's the best game I've ever played, just from the whole aspect of it.
So if I'm down in Orlando, do I have to find anybody that I might know who could let me in this game as a tourist down there for a few days? It sounds like this is perfect.
If you know,
I would love to be in that one.
Yeah, it's a game. Orange Tree's a private club, but if you know somebody, and if you came down and you wanted to play, you just have to let me know, and I could probably get you. I could probably get you out there. When we have a new player come in, anybody that comes in first time, we usually add a couple shots, whatever their handicap is, you know, because that's all we have to go off of new players is their handicap. So we actually usually add a couple shots because the golf course is that hard.
I'm okay with losing money too, just to be involved in this game. I'm assuming I'm going to be the sucker if I go down there for that one, but it sounds like a blast. So next time in Orlando, you might see a text from me.
All right, perfect.
Next question. I always ask these guys, and I always ask them the best shot you ever hit under pressure. And I can't ask you that one because I think everyone knows that shot. What's the second best golf shot you ever hit under pressure in a tour event?
Oh, a tour event. I was going to go to the Walker Cup, but tour event. Let's see.
Or it can be Walker Cup, a major event, not at your home club or something like that. So Walker Cup's perfectly fine.
Well, I made a putt on the last hole. My last match, I made my singles match the second day, and I made about 50 footer up the hill to win the match, and that was probably my next clutch shot. I'll go back even further. Well, that's later on at Q School. I was right on the number at 3 over to get my card, at the Woodlands. And I, you know, 18 at the Woodlands is over water, and, you know, the second shot's over water, and tough hole. And I need to make par to have a chance. And sure enough, I hit this great clutch iron shot onto the green and two putted for par, so that helped me obviously get my card, which helped me win Tucson, and, you know, the rest is history. But so those two shots are probably my next two greatest, you know, clutch shots. Probably one of my second famous shots probably would be, I had a hole in one at Whistling Straits on 17 on Friday in the first time I held the PGA there. And I forget what year that was, but it was when Vijay Singh won. And I hold a 5 iron on 17. It was my eighth hole on Friday, and I ended up making the cut on the number because of that shot. And granted, I still had to play the front nine, but it was pretty exciting. It's the only one that's ever been caught on TV, and I've only had two on tour. So I've had 17 total hole in ones, but two of them on tour now. And that was the first one. My next one was at Pebble Beach not at Pebble, but it was during the AT&T at, what were we playing? Poppy Hills, I think. Yeah, Poppy Hills. But those shots right there, but the two clutch ones were the Walker Cup and to get my card.
Who had the most just raw natural talent you ever played professional golf with that you were just blown away what they could do from a talent standpoint?
That's a Good question. Talent-wise, I don't know. John Daly has a bunch of talent, and you know, he's a guy that I think he. I don't know if he ever got any formal lessons. Yeah, John and I have been really good friends for a long, long time, and probably since 91 or 2, and probably 92, I guess. And he's one of those guys that just, as far as raw talent goes, I would say he was probably one of the best.
It's funny. I've gotten that answer from a multitude of people, and I've asked the same question too. You can see it. He's got God-given ability. There's no doubt about it. Two more to go here. If you could take three other PGA Tour players, they could be Champions Tour players, and you're going to play a fun money game with them, have dinner and drinks afterwards, which three other guys are you taking to make your foursome, and what golf course are you guys going to go play?
That's a good one, but I know John would be in there, obviously. Fuzzy Zeller, and I'd have to go with Rich Beam, because and that's a group that the four of us used to play a lot of practice rounds together back in the day. We'd play a lot of practice rounds during the majors and during some other, and we just have fun. We'd joke around with the crowds and, you know, sign autographs and just enjoy hanging out. And we'd go to dinner a lot. You know, we'd all hang out, have a few drinks, have some dinner, and just, it was just a fun time being out, especially when Fuzzy was around and we were playing a lot of golf together. Now, next golf course, I don't know. For me, I would love to have it at like Hilton Head, Harbortown, just because it's a shorter golf course. It was always one of my favorites to play there, and I always loved playing Colonial because they weren't bombers golf courses. You had to drive the ball pretty straight, think around the golf course. You had to, think about what side of the fairway you wanted to hit the ball on instead of just hitting it out there. And that's the kind of golf that I enjoy, as we were talking about link style. I mean, it's a similar type of thinking your way around the golf course. So to me, I would say probably Hilton Head, if we could play around the golf.
With those three guys, you could have fun playing any golf course. I would pay money just to watch you four go at it for even 9 holes. Has got to be hilarious. So it's a great group.
It was always fun when we played. Like I said, when we played our practice rounds, we played a lot. And I mean, John would get somebody out and have them hit a shot or something. I mean, just anything could happen, and it was a lot of fun.
Well, my final question for you, in your opinion, what's the three best golf courses in the world, and why are those three the best? What attributes do they have? If you could pick them anywhere in the world that you've played.
Anywhere in the world I've played? That's a really good question. Obviously, St. Andrews is going to be in my number one. And it's just the things we talked about, the link style and having to hit all the shots, not just get up there and rip it, having to think your way around it.
Is Augusta on that list?
For me, no. And don't get me wrong. I enjoyed playing the Masters the 2 times I played it. It's a drawers golf course, right to left players course, which I hit it the opposite way. So it was always a struggle for me. And, you know, it's also another one you have to putt well. And that was always a struggle for me. As far as beauty, I mean, it's probably the most beautiful golf course I've ever played, and most manicured and wonderful places in the world to be. But if you're just talking straight golf course,
For me, no,
just because of what I say. I mean, I can't play it as well because when I played the 2 years I played it, my rookie 90 and 91, and I was a low fader of the golf ball, and it's a golf course you need to hit high draws on. And I just struggled. I couldn't turn it right to left on 13. I couldn't, you know, on 8, I was always back, you know, 18 was perfect for me. It was one of the few holes that went left to right. So, but again, it's a golf course that we all want to play on. We all want to be around. And obviously you want to be playing in the Masters because that means you had a successful year the year before. So, let's see. I always enjoyed playing Quail Hollow. That was a fun golf course. And obviously I've always enjoyed, as I said earlier, playing, Harbortown and Colonial. God, there's so many good golf courses that I've played that I enjoy playing.
Have you had a chance?
I have
to play
played Pine Valley. I did play Pine Valley once, and it was fun. It was a good golf course to have a game on. I don't know if it's one that I would say is one of the greatest that I've played, but it's up there in the top 5 to 10 for sure. I'm just trying to think of any others out of the country because I haven't played, you know, I played quite a bit in Japan. There weren't any golf courses there that I would think would be in the top, you know, around the world. You know, Royal Melbourne was pretty good. I enjoyed playing there.
I've heard that's fantastic. I mean, just
it was a good golf course where you just had to get all the shots. I mean, you had to drive it well. It'll hit a lot of good golf shots, iron shots, and think. It was another one you had to think around. So that would definitely be up there. I'm just giving you in my top five because I can't pick just three.
No,
except St. Andrews is like number one for sure.
Well, that's absolutely. I haven't played it yet, but I could understand why that would be at the top of your list. So. Well, I definitely want to thank you so much for your time and really looking forward to watching you get on the Champions Tour. And what a great event for you to start off with at your favorite golf course. So we will definitely be watching to see how you do. And like I said, man, I really, really appreciate your time in doing this and best of luck.
Thank you so much. Appreciate it.